Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamong.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, the Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you following the week one loss on the road at the hands of the Ohio State Buckeyes. I am Frank Vitovich, one of your co-hosts for the next hour or so, joined by Greg Flamong, the president of Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily after a hiatus of the two of us podcasting, which was partially, maybe fully my fault. But Greg, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. I'm very hot outside here. It's 500 degrees in California and it has been for like a week. Yeah, it's very hot. So, but I'm doing okay. Coming off the game, a lot of analysis, a lot of videos. Everything, we're in full swing, so feeling all right.
Good. I'll tell you, it's good to be podcasting with you again. I'm still a little weary and catching up on my sleep. So the reason Greg and I did not podcast together last week is because I thought it was a good idea to do a family vacation to Europe. Week one of the college football season, thinking I could still maintain my posting schedule and all of that. Turns out that was an overestimation on me. But I did get to spend a beautiful 9 to 10 days in Portugal. So no regrets other than the lack of content that I produced last week. So sorry about that, folks. But other than that, no regrets. So Greg, you and I haven't had a chance to catch up too much other than a few messages and some interactions on the Twitter machine. But I figure we start. Where are you feeling? I don't want maybe confidence factor. Where's just your overall feeling right now before we get into specifics of the Notre Dame program for, not even, looking beyond this week this season right now, like where are you feeling about the program coming out of that game?
Big picture question. Okay. I don't know.
We start big and then we'll get
micro. It's hard to say really, about like the program at large. I think that, I guess I feel a little bit better about it. And I'll tell you why, because I think that, it's been a popular sentiment, that this is kind of the same old story, right?
It's not
that, it just that like, defense played well in a big game in the regular season again. Gave the offense a chance to win, and the offense was not good enough again, right?
True.
And so everyone kind of from that point of view, everyone kind of is like, well, we've seen this before, right? Like, new coach, same old story, right? And from my point of view, that's actually a kind of a good thing, because we need to remember Notre Dame was not looking to move on from their coach last year. They were not. They were kind of forced into it. And we have to remember, they're taking a flyer on Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
And the flyer that they're taking is that this is a guy who is an up-and-comer in the coaching ranks, is a tremendous recruiter, which we've been reaping the benefits of all offseason, right? We like all offseason, it's been everything that Marcus Freeman is good at. It's being the face of the program, being a recruiter, getting out there on the recruiting trail and making it happen, right? That is what Marcus Freeman can do. We know that going in, and he pressed that advantage to the hilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now we're getting to games, and that is the big unknown with him. We don't know how he can run a program. We don't know how he's going to get his team ready to go for a big game. And if to me, if this year in 2022 now, okay, if in 2022 the outcome is similar to what Brian Kelly would have given us, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Now, granted, that is an aside from the game itself, right?
Right.
We can talk about the game itself, because if this was a Brian Kelly team, there would be a number of criticisms, and I have a number of criticisms, okay? But from a big picture point of view, I think that this outcome is the way that it happened. They didn't get blown out. They didn't look completely unprepared just from a
right. –
You know, the way the game was played out, right? Like they weren't a mess. They weren't a tire fire. It wasn't any of that stuff, right? Yeah. Like they lost in the ways that they've lost. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a big picture point of view. Like I feel, I don't want to say better. I feel like almost I'm almost comforted by the familiarity of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I guess
that's fair.
Is the best way for me to put it.
Let me ask you another question. All right.
Okay.
Let's take 2012 Oklahoma out of the equation for a second. That game in this scenario, it does not exist. Name me another game in the 12 years of Brian Kelly. Road game against a top tier opponent outside of that Oklahoma game that you would say is substantially better than what we saw Saturday night from Notre Dame in Columbus.
Like the game itself?
Yeah, just like in terms of, you know, what we saw in Notre Dame playing the number two team in the country, you know, they had the lead until what? 17 seconds left to go in the third quarter. Name me another game in the last 12 years where you could point to and say, hey, again, other than that Oklahoma game, which was great. It was a great game. Yeah. But I'm saying other than that, was there in the 12 years – that Brian Kelly had this program, was there another road game against a top-tier opponent? Or hell, another – I mean, I guess you could say the Clemson game in 2020 was the only other time. Even a home game, you know, Notre Dame played a top-five, top-ten opponent better than they did Ohio State. I couldn't think of it. I was trying to think. I'm like, well, maybe there's
– Well, so
Georgia
2014 Florida State.
Oh, that's right. That's fair.
Obvious answer. I mean, that might be the best game they've played, like, bar none.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like that game, it was the same situation, 2 versus 5.
Yep.
Yeah. On the road, Heisman Trophy winner, reigning national champion. I mean, that was the best game I think that Brian Kelly's teams have ever played.
That's
and
fair.
It was a victory that was taken away. I think 2015 Clemson was better.
Do you? I don't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. That Clemson team went to the national championship game and lost.
Mm-hmm.
But they lost in the national title game.
Okay.
So that was a really good team. They lost by 2. They gave up 24 points. So, I mean, that game was – I mean, they lost by 2 points. They lost on the last play of the game. There's that.
What's the common factor in all these games?
I would say, hold on. I would say 2015 Stanford. I mean, I think that Stanford team finished pretty high up. I have to look. That was a better game It's a worse loss. It feels we don't put it in that category because Stanford is seen as our peer. Not there's not the talent deficiency, right? So if you want, we could throw that out because we're kind of talking about teams that we don't view that way. Right. I would say 2015 Clemson, 2014 FSU, and frankly 2019 Georgia were better performances than on the main.
All right, fair. So, and what was the common denominator in all that?
The common denominator was good defense.
The obvious one. This is the biggest obvious one. Notre Dame lost all of them.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. I guess that's my point is like, you know, this game, there's a number of things that were obviously not fun about it. I didn't enjoy it. I got heated on Twitter a few times. But I think where I was going with this was kind of even what you were saying, though, in your lead in of it was not an ideal performance. But at the same token, if I reverse that and I said, can you name five other games where Notre Dame went on the road against a top tier opponent and just was totally outclassed? You could probably name them.
Yeah.
You probably need more than five. And that's to me is the biggest thing going into this game. And I should have said this on the preview pod that I did by myself, because again, I was 8 hours ahead of you time zone wise over in Portugal. And I was pretty tired and delirious when I did that. And had a few really bad Portuguese beers. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, but the Portuguese, man, they do some really good things with pork. They do some really good things with pastries. They don't do that many good things with beer. They do really good things with wine, too. But Europeans in general, not necessarily outside of like Belgium, don't necessarily do beer well. And I don't necessarily like Belgian beers. But anyway, that's an aside. Speaking of, the reason I haven't opened a beer yet is because I am pretty damn tired still. I have one here in case I need it. But I'm drinking an Irish coffee in my Brady Quinn for the booth mug. Shout out to ND Tex and Bridget Go Irish who collaborated on that mug a few years ago. But going in, and I should have said this in the pod, is I thought there was a greater chance for Notre Dame to get blown out and embarrassed again than I did for Notre Dame to win the game. Like, I thought there was a chance for Notre Dame to win. Everyone said there was no chance. And that was that point I think I made in the pod. But I probably didn't make the point enough that, like, if I was being honest with myself going into that and you said, what is more likely, a Notre Dame win or an Ohio State blowout win? I probably would have said an Ohio State blowout win just because we've seen it happen so many times. It was Freeman's first game. It was Buckner's first game starting. And the fact that we had the lead as late as we did and we could actually look at this game and go, well, shit. Mistakes that Notre Dame made is why they really ultimately lost that game. Versus just looking at the game and saying, like, well, Notre Dame had no business, you know, being in that game. Like, the games against Alabama, you look at and you go, that Notre Dame lost to Alabama, which I would say, I mean, maybe those Bama teams were a little bit a tier above this Ohio State team. But you look at it and you go, well, yeah, that game was never a game, right? Even the Clemson ACC championship game was like, well, you know, shit, that was just over before it started. Clemson Cotton Bowl was close for a quarter. And then as soon as Julian Love got hurt, it was like, boom, all of a sudden you're down. You know, you're down a bunch. Miami 2017 was, you blinked and all of a sudden Notre Dame, you know, was down. And that was against Miami, which wasn't even that great of a team. And you look at some of the road failures that this team had under Brian Kelly, like 2019 Michigan. Michigan team in 2019 was not that good, and Notre Dame went in and got embarrassed on the road. And you look at that track record and you go, well, that was probably more likely to happen than a win. So for Notre Dame to come out and play as tough as they did, I was encouraged, even though there were obviously things I'm concerned about, you know, both short term and long term. But I think one of the biggest concerns going in was, you mentioned, is what is this program going to look like with Freeman leading the show? The Fiesta Bowl was a mixed bag of Freeman as a head coach. And we all were like, well, he was on the job for 3 weeks, so we can't really take too much from that. But there were concerns coming out of the Fiesta Bowl of like, well, you know, Freeman looked like a rookie head coach in the Fiesta Bowl on the sidelines. We talked about this in the post game pod of that game. I remember we both were like, well, shit, man, he looked like, you know, like Ricky Bobby with like his hands up. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands on the sideline in the Fiesta Bowl. He did not at any time look like that on Saturday night. He looked like a guy in control. And he admitted, like, hey, there were communication things that we messed up on. But, you know, that's going to happen. That happened 10 years into the Brian Kelly era. So that was, I think all of that was encouraging to me.
Okay. I mean, that's not it, because it's not for me to say yes or no to that. Right. It's your feeling. You can be encouraged by it if you want. Yeah. So I'm not going to poo-poo that, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you feel. I do have a question, though.
Go for
it. Okay. And I think this kind of steps on one of the questions that we got from someone on Twitter. But that's okay. That person knows the question, and then we'll address it later. So you said you were afraid that this could go bad, right? Notre Dame could get dominated, right?
Correct.
Whatever your fears were about the offense going into the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were any of those fears not realized?
My fears on the offense specifically, were any of those fears not?
Were you wrong about anything? Like of the things you were concerned about?
On offense?
Yeah, is there anything on offense where you're like, you know what? I was concerned about X, but
no.
That game was actually like, no, right? There's a question about who impressed you on the offense.
Yeah.
And it's like,
there's two I can think of.
I could think of
three. There's three that come to my mind.
There's one that comes to my mind.
Okay. Well, some are also expectation versus production in my mind in terms of impressed, but who you got as your one?
Buckner.
Okay. You know what? Yeah.
Buckner. Go ahead.
No, Buckner impressed. So other names that were coming to my mind, actually. One was, I mean, for the offensive line was obviously not good.
Yeah.
But of the five names on the offensive line, whose name did you not really hear called much at all?
Well, of the five of them,
yeah,
I would say just Alton Fisher.
Yeah,
were the two guys.
Even Fisher, man, there was a couple. The one replay specifically, like Fisher, just looked kind of lost and gave up a sack.
Well, it was the one at the end.
Yeah,
you know, and that was tough, right? But it's like, you know, it's.
Well, so Alt was where I was going. Alt was where I was going on the offensive line. He didn't play a perfect game, but I mean, of the offensive linemen, he was the most encouraging. I mean, I think other than the offensive pass interference, we got more out of Salerno than I thought we were going to from a passing game. And that's where I'm saying like expectation versus production. I don't know that.
I think I could say the receivers, right? Like I could say Lindsey, but it's like, then I'm just naming like Lindsey made a good play and Salerno made a good play and Styles made a good play. Well, that's not.
No, but I would say
I expected
more out of Styles and Lindsey than I did Salerno.
But the point is like I don't ding them because they weren't given opportunity, right?
No.
Like Styles was not given opportunity.
Two freaking targets.
It's not that I think they're not good, right? It's that I can't say either way because they weren't really given a chance to show anything. So but the point is like we're worried about wide receiver depth, right? Well, to me, that kind of showed itself because we're running like, you know, we're running so much 12 personnel for a reason, you know. I watched the game back a lot today, so I noticed a lot more things than I would have normally, or like I did the first time around, right? Uh-huh. And so everyone's upset. So that you know, after Salerno gets the offensive pass interference, right? They run a quarterback, like a jet. It's like a zone read, basically. And actually, if Buckner pulls it, but if he had pulled it and stayed outside, or if he just given it to Diggs, they had a huge play going. I'll probably post it on Twitter later. Like, it's just, they had a huge play available to them. Whatever, he gets 7 yards. And then the next play, so it's second and 18, down 4 points, start of the fourth quarter. Like, they just scored, right? This is for the game. This is a huge possession. Second and 18, you go 22 personnel. You have two tight ends, two running backs, one wide receiver, and you run jet for a loss of like one or two or whatever. And it's like, that's unserious, right? And you do that because you don't have the wideouts, okay? So you're concerned about that. You're concerned about just like, I don't know, is our offensive line actually going to be good? I thought they could win the matchup.
As did I.
And not only did they not win the matchup, because like, I thought the defensive line would win the matchup. And they didn't, but they didn't get dominated, you know? Mm-hmm. They had drives where they got dominated, but on the main, they didn't. Mm-hmm. The offensive line got dominated from start to finish, basically. Yep. I mean, they had a couple drives where they opened up some stuff for Estime and Tyree and that sort of thing, and Buckner had some time. So I don't want to say it was complete, but for the most part, they weren't good enough to win the game. And so to me, what the overall point is, like, I just don't think that the offensive line was, or the offense did anything to make me think like, yeah, like I was afraid of X and no, I was wrong. They're actually really good at Y, you know? So.
Yeah, no. And that is a fair assessment. If anything, I probably came away with more concerns about the offense than I had going in.
I thought the offensive line wasn't a concern.
No, it was not.
And now it's a concern.
It is a definite concern. Which is not good. I think we all assumed offensive line struggles left with Jeff Quinn, and apparently they didn't. The other thing I think we could, not, I don't want to say chalk it up to, but I think the loss of Patterson obviously was a much larger loss than any of us realized it would be, because it just highlighted the struggles of the interior of the line, because the tackles, you know, I thought, again, you don't hear an offensive lineman's name. It's generally a pretty good thing because it means they didn't get called for a penalty. You didn't see him in a highlight giving up a negative play. It doesn't mean they played a perfect game, but, you know, it means they usually played a pretty good game. So there was that, which I thought was good. Fisher, yeah, was pretty good. He wasn't as good as, you know, maybe, you know, he was in the Fiesta Bowl, but the interior line was just, oof, man. The film session with Harry Heastan and that interior line could not have been fun. Like, and also like probably like beyond R rated based on the language that I'm just going to assume was used in that room. It was bad. Like, and not again, it's just, it wasn't all just like being overpowered either. Which is not, I mean, I don't know, maybe you could take some positive in that of like, if they were being overpowered by Ohio State, you'd be like, well, shit, that's not good. Some of it was just like blown assignments, like, you know, just not blocking guys. It was just, you know, and it was just busted. And Notre Dame had, you highlighted one already. There were other times where it was like, man, if you like just gave Buckner some freaking time to pass. Like, he completed his first 8 passes, and not all of those were gimmies, right? He was looking sharp. And even, you know, some of the plays where, you know, he missed towards the end, you're like, well, he just had no time. Like, the bomb to Styles. Like, if he had any semblance of a pocket there, you know, the second target to Styles would have been a touchdown. And it would have been a walk-in touchdown because Styles was that open. you know, he would have had two catches for 100 yards and a touchdown instead of just one for 54, you know, or whatever the, I forget the exact yardage that play would have been, but it was there.
Yeah.
He just had no time. And I think that was what probably gave me the most confidence in Buckner moving forward, is his stat line wasn't the prettiest, but he didn't turn the ball over, which was huge on the road against, you know, in a hostile environment, making his first start in what, 3 years? Right?
Yeah.
Right. 2019 was the last time he started a football game because he lost 2020 because of the COVID year. He obviously didn't, you know, start a game last year. He didn't look rattled. He had a couple throws too where you're like, damn, that was a good throw. There was the one in particular that, you know, probably could have been an interception too, but it also could have been a catch by Lindsey if Lindsey holds on to it. Now I'm forgetting. I think it was one that he kind of forced, and it could have been a pick, but it also
hit Lindsey. If it's the one I'm thinking of, it did not hit Lindsey in anything. It was a very bad decision because on the other side, Styles is kind of open on the curl. I'll show it to you later. Lindsey had no chance.
All right.
He had no chance. I'll show it to you later. He did not.
The point remains that Buckner played like he didn't look rattled.
No. Yeah, totally.
Like, no, and even when he was getting the crap kicked out of him, right, he was getting hit early, you know, and it wasn't like it was not the Tyler Buckner that we saw in Blacksburg who did get rattled after early success.
He did not. The first play of the game, he did RPO and got hit in the face. You know, they called a penalty and he took it in the face and then he, you know, kept going. Right. Like, and that happened a lot. So.
Yeah. So that was encouraging. And that's why, like, you look at the line and you look at the talent that's there, you look who's coaching them. And I think coming out of this, you have to go, okay, we all overestimated a little bit that it would be a seamless transition. Jeff Quinn and Harry Heaston are very different offensive line coaches, different scheme, different blocking schemes, you know, and we're like, okay, Harry's just going to make it work right away. And it didn't happen, you know, and you lose an All-American and they plugged in a guy who started a lot last year and it was like, well, okay, you're going to plug in a guy who started last year. It's going to be fine. And it wasn't. It wasn't at all. And I think that's the biggest concern, like hands down, coming out of this game was the offensive line. I think the defensive line was also it's more of a concern now than it was going into the game because I assumed that the line, like you said, the defensive line could potentially win this game. And it looked like it early on. You know, Cross gets the sack on what, second play of the game? Or not second play of the game, but second offensive snap or through whatever it was, you know, for Ohio State. And you're like, look at this. Cross gets in, you know, no real like exotic blitz, you know, being sent. Like, this is great. This is what you expected of Notre Dame's defensive line. And then, man, like I texted buddies of mine. And I'm like, am I nuts? Or I didn't see Jason Adamiola like in on anything really until it was like the third quarter. I'm like, man, like what has happened? Like you think he was going to have I thought he was going to have a big game. He's played big in big games for Notre Dame. And then that didn't happen. Foskey did not. Yeah, I saw your one tweet about how he got like just fell over and got fallen on by an offensive lineman early in the game. And you're like, well, that's not going to look good on tape for him. And in general, like, I don't know if you could point to one of Notre Dame's defensive linemen and say like, well, they had a good game from start to finish, which is a concern. Cause you think that defensive, like again, it's thought to be a strength. And it's a concern that didn't exist for me going into the game.
Right. So I thought, well, okay. I thought Riley Mills played well.
He did. He got some pressure.
Here's the thing. There were player. It's kind of unlike, it's kind of the opposite problem of the offensive line where you had Alton Fisher generally played well. and it was the interior guys, right? But you knew you could count on Alton Fisher, right? Mm-hmm. And so you got to clean up the interior. I, to me, the defensive line was the opposite problem, where like Howard Cross and Jacob Lacey and even Chris Smith and Riley Mills, Nanel Safa-Mensah gave him some good snaps, right? Like, so they got stuff, they got pretty good play from those guys, but then the two main ones, Jason Adamalola and Foskey, just nothing there. I mean, it was not good, you know? And here's the thing, you know, Foskey reminded me of that game Julian Aquara played in the opener against Louisville in 2019. Because I remember Aquara had all these hurries and pressures in 2018. And it was like, man, he could 19 sacks, right? That just turned all these pressures into some sacks and we're going to be good. And then it just wasn't there in the opener. And the difference was, it's like, you know, obviously Ohio State is a different animal than Louisville, right? So that's, point taken, but it just like it was kind of a body out there. Didn't make plays in the passing game, didn't make make plays in the running game, wasn't holding the edge, like Jamie was talking about this on Power today, didn't hold the edge on runs to his side, to the outside. He had the one play where he was very close to making an impact was the controversial double safety blitz, where he's beating the tackle, he's getting held a little bit, not terribly, but a little bit, and he's, I don't know, in 2 inches away from hitting his arm, and you know, it gets knocked down or it's a strip or something like that. But
yeah,
I hate that call. Yeah, but beyond that, well, I mean, obviously I didn't like
it. I know you didn't. Neither. I saw your tweet. You said what? You said something along the lines of,
"I've never."
It didn't work with Kyle Hamilton. What made you think?
I've never liked it. Yeah, don't ever do it. It's just not getting
like
there.
When has it ever worked for Notre Dame? I mean, maybe it's worked like once or twice, and I can't. I just have so many memories of like similar, ill-fated blitz calls. Like going back to, 2000. I'm going to throw this one back a while. 2000 Michigan State. Right, 2000 Michigan State, Jeff Smoker on the, was it third or fourth down, where they sent the safety and what you let you surprised that I could pull that from the vault?
It's just that's wild.
Just pulling it from the vault.
I don't even know if this is accurate. I'll take your word for it.
I'm pretty positive. Like I remember watching that at my sister's wedding and then getting yelled at like pretty badly by my mom because I was, you know, just standing at the bar watching that wedding or watching that game instead of being an active participant in the wedding reception. But it's just like it going back to that, and it's like it's happened many times where Notre Dame dials that up and you're like, why are you sending pressure from so far back? And And this is going to go into something actually that I liked about Freeman, as I saw his explanation for it today. I think it was today, or maybe it was on after the game, where he was like, you know what? No, I would do the call again. We all agreed on it. It was, you know, we were a little bit late. You know, but it was Freeman not throwing a coach under the bus, not throwing players really under the bus, taking accountability. And saying, like, you know what, ultimately we all agreed. This is what we did. And it was refreshing to have a coach say that. Cause I gotta say, I don't know if that would have been the same answer that we would have gotten a year ago. If, you know, in a similar situation. But I hate that blitz. I hate it. I feel like even corner blitzes almost never work for Notre Dame. I mean, I'm sure, again, if we go back into the vault, there's probably more plays.
Well, they work as run blitzes. They worked a couple times for Notre Dame as run blitzes in this game. So,
but not third.
Blitzes, I mean corner, from the corner.
But in obvious passing situations, I just feel like it never works for Notre Dame. And I have traumatized by the times that it doesn't, because then you remember plays from 22 years ago that that resulted in game winning scores.
I mean, if anyone has listened to me on the post game show with Jamie or the morning after show that I did by myself, if you want to check out on YouTube on Irish Sports Daily, thank you for letting me plug. I hated it. I've never liked it.
No.
And to be honest, like, I do appreciate, I get to your point. I do appreciate the explanation from Freeman.
Yeah.
I don't want to say I don't buy it, but I don't like your logic because here's the other part. They didn't even execute it right.
No.
Because he said that there was a player who was supposed to come and did it, and that player was Bertrand.
Yeah.
So it's a zero blitz, right? If you're blitzing zero, then you have a player. He's dropping, covering no one. It's a zero blitz. So you got to come. That's the whole point. You don't have someone like that. So Bertrand had to come. It didn't matter because he would have occupied a blocker that ended up blocking Joseph, but Joseph wasn't getting there anyway. So it ultimately didn't matter. But the point is like you ran the blitz with Jaden Mickey as your nickel. And he's not normally your nickel. Normally it's Tariq Bracey. He had just come out of the game.
Yep.
So, I mean, like maybe you like the blitz in practice in the game plan, but in this game, you know, you it's third and 11.
Yeah.
You cannot give up a chunk there. You cannot, especially when they only have 7 points.
With all freaking game, you were stopping them in that situation. Like all game, Notre Dame was good on third down.
The problem is that they hadn't been generating a rush with four.
Yeah.
And so that's what you do. You can't get a rush with four. So then you say, okay, we want to dial pressure because that's how we're going to get to them.
Yeah.
And so one thing leads to another thing that leads to a questionable call that leads to a touchdown. And I feel bad for Jaden Mickey too because he's in a tough spot.
Oh, right. Him and Morrison, we'll probably talk about that. Like, they're going to be good. They're going to be ballers. And that's very encouraging. That's, again, when we start talking about things that are encouraging on defense, they're going to be at the top of the list.
Well, why don't we get to questions? Because there's a lot of questions about the game. And so we can do that.
We can get – okay, before that, the one thing I will say, though, that I do – I am kind of in your same agreement here of, like, I don't know if I buy Freeman's excuse or rationale. I won't call it excuse, rationale. But I appreciate it because you know what happens if he says – Now, you know, hindsight, you know, let's say this was his answer. If he said something like, well, you know what, hindsight 2020, maybe we want to dial up that blitz. What's the story after the game? Or what are people talking about? They're talking about defensive-minded Marcus Freeman, former defensive coordinator, questioning the play call of his new defensive coordinator, which is not a good scenario for anybody in that situation. So I appreciate, how he answered it, especially again, when you compare it to how a certain head coach in the state of Louisiana answered some questions following his own loss, which I'm sure we'll get into as well here. But let's load up the questions. I'm going to load this back up, and then we could start running through some of those. All right, let's go in. Let's go in here. All right. Here we go. Questions. We're going to start off with our friend Oscar at Vamos Irish. It's a three-parter, as Oscar is known for. He's famously known for his three-part questions here. Is the Notre Dame offensive performance more of an indicator of the Notre Dame offense or the Ohio State defense? Or a 64, is it, he's saying, or is it maybe a 60-40 blend of what it's an indicator of?
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's probably more of an indicator of where the Notre Dame offense is. Just because I don't necessarily think Ohio State was really doing that much, you know, up front. To you know, for you to say like, ah, it was just Ohio State, you know, balling out. I mean, Knowles did a pretty good job of disguising some things throughout the game and causing, you know, some confusion. But at the same time, I think it was more of an indicator of where the Notre Dame offense is today, not necessarily where it's going to be, you know, 11 games from now.
So it's kind of a blend because there are things that Notre Dame can't do that they'll be able to do against other teams,
right,
that kind of open up a lot, right? So like Kyla Buckner can't get the edge against Ohio State. We know that because he couldn't, right?
Right. So, well, he couldn't with the blocking that he was getting.
Right. So but there were times when it's like he's designed to get to the edge and he can't because they were too fast out there. So there's that. And if that isn't available, then you're going to have that takes away a lot of things, mm-hmm. right? I'd like to think that what they were doing up front confused the offensive line to the point where there were so many busts. Yeah. You know, I mean, there were busts. But
I don't think they were necessarily doing anything crazy exotic, though.
I was talking with Matt and Jamie, and Matt was saying that there were some they were doing some shifts late in the count where it's like they couldn't they couldn't get the line call in time to everybody, right? And so I'll take him at his word, right? If that was the case, I don't know, but yeah. At least he was surmising that, or he was, you know, guessing at that. Because I was asking if it might be a Buckner problem, because Buckner referenced it in the post game, which if it's true, then okay, understandable. And if it isn't true, then good on him for falling on the sword. I'd like to think that not every team can put Notre Dame in that kind of a bind up front.
There's one other on the schedule that can.
Clemson?
Yeah.
That's November, you know?
Exactly. Well, there's a lot of
hopefully,
time.
Hopefully that gets figured out by then.
Agreed. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So, Oscar's second part. What are your points per game expectations for the next two games, Marshall and Cal? Reminder, Notre Dame scored 10 against Ohio State.
Yeah. At 31.
That's it?
Yeah.
31. Okay. I think Notre Dame is going to score a lot the next couple games because I don't necessarily think either opponent is all that good. So let me reference, because I want to look this up so I get this right. All right. So I was thinking of the Georgia game in 2019. In terms of similar times where the Notre Dame offense kind of struggled and then played somewhat two weaker opponents. One was probably better than the other. Actually, Virginia was pretty good when they played them, and Notre Dame put up 35, but I think that included at least one defensive touchdown. Was that a two defensive touchdown game?
Which one?
2019 Virginia, off the top of my head. I know there was at least one. There was a lot of turnovers.
There was one from Ade. There was one where Myron ran to like the five, but he didn't score.
Right. A lot of turnovers, I mean, that game.
They scored on the next play, so.
35 that game, 52 the following game against Bowling Green. But, I mean, I think the defensive performance probably plays a role in that, too, because it's not saying, I mean, if defense causes turnovers and gives this team a short field, then that's going to result in more points. I think Notre Dame scores 40 over the next two. Not total. 40 average. Because I just think, especially, you know, this weekend against Marshall, I think you're going to see a lot of kinks, you know, kind of work themselves out. And same with Cal. I mean, I think Marshall probably scored a little bit more against them than Cal. But I think we'll see some good scoring out of the Notre Dame offense.
I would love that.
I would too. I think we all would. By the way, I did open the beer that I had here. The folks listening might have heard the little going on. It's a very simple one, though. It's just a little Bell's Two Hearted Ale. I know we got some friends of the pod who are big fans of Bell's, Michigan Brewery. I had some in the fridge. It's a solid beer. And it's not weak, so that's always good. All right, so we got third part from Oscar here is, how do you adjust to over consumption over the last 3 days? And says, I am so full all the time. So referencing obviously the long weekend, lots of football, lots of barbecues, potentially lots of cerveja, as they say in Portugal, as I learned, and is one of four or five words I've learned in Portuguese after being there for 9 days. But how do you overcome for overconsumption?
Yeah. Green drinks, man.
Oh man, that's all. What about the food? Does that helps with, or did you, were you disciplined in your diet over the long weekend?
No, no, today green drinks. That's how I
gotcha.
That's how I rebound.
Gotcha. Green drinks. I planned on today being a pretty good day, and then our neighbors were like, "Hey, we're having a bunch of people over. Why don't you guys come over?" We're like, "Okay," and you know, we went over, we took some beers. They had some beers already. There was a lot of food. It was a good day. Good fun was had by all. And who am I to say no to having fun, you know, when your neighbors want to hang out, right?
Go for it.
Right? I mean, yeah, I just had like 9 straight days of gluttony in another country where we just kind of ate and drank nonstop. But hey, so how do I adjust to that? Well, obviously not well is my first answer. But now the rest of the week, I will probably try to dial it back and just run a lot. I did a nice 5-mile run today in the humidity. It was awful, but I finished it. And this weekend, I'm probably not going to be able to overindulge at all, unfortunately, during any football games, because I'm getting a tooth implant put in. Finally. I've had a hole in my mouth since like February, and there's like a fake tooth in there now. And apparently you can't drink for like 3 days, and you apparently have to eat really soft foods for like 3 days after it goes in. So not going to be fun weekend. All right. Next question that we got from Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77. Is the Harry Hiestand hype overrated? Notre Dame's offensive line has not played well in most big games. Give us some reason for optimism and do so with removing Patterson from the conversation, which I think is smart or a wise assumption, because if Patterson couldn't play against Ohio State, you're not playing him again, or you're not playing him until October at the earliest, because if he couldn't play against Ohio State in that game, and if he was, you know, you're not going to play him against Marshall. You're probably not going to play him against Cal. Maybe North Carolina if he's feeling better by then. But North Carolina, I mean, they did not look good this weekend. So
not defensively, they didn't.
No. So, I mean, you probably don't need to, again, until October. So I think that's a good assumption. Is the Harry Hiestand hype overrated? I'm going to say no as of now. It's one game. It was not a good game. We're going to see how he adjusts and how the line adjusts. I think the next 3 weeks, you're not going up against good defenses. You're not going up against good defensive lines. A lot of the stuff that we saw Saturday night, you're not going to see again, maybe until later this year. So, I mean, I think it's too early to say whether the Harry Hiestand hype is overrated. Obviously, you wanted to see a much better performance from the offensive line because we all thought it was going to be a strength of the team, and it was far from it. It was, in fact, probably the number one reason why Notre Dame lost the game on Saturday night was the offensive line.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Drew listens to our show. When he was hired, we noted the big games what have not been the best for Harry Hiestand offensive lines, right? Nope. Like the games we talked about, you know, 2017 Georgia, couldn't block them, right?
Nope.
2017 Miami, couldn't block them. 2017 Stanford, couldn't block them. 2015 Clemson, couldn't block them, right? So, you know, I mean, what can we say? Like, he hasn't had great performances in the big games either, you know? So,
yeah.
That's been the case. So to me, it depends who you talk to. If you're talking to me or you're talking to you, then no, he was not overhyped. Maybe some other people said everything was going to be fine, and you know, he's the greatest ever. But
yeah,
to me, you know, look, and point taken on Jarrett Patterson, right? Like, it's funny to me, right? Because, like, okay, Jarrett Patterson got hurt 2 weeks ago. Andrew Kristofics played a lot of football, enough football, in my opinion. It's not like it's his first game. He had 2 weeks to get him ready to go. He started 7 or 8 games last year, right? Mm-hmm. So he had experience. Okay. Harry Hiestand's had him for 9 months now. He's had Zeke Correll for 9 months now. Who's also started games at center. Josh Lugg is 25 years old or whatever he is, right? Like you have guys who have played in big games. And and so, like, to me, you know, the bus and stuff and the communication, like, that's just, I mean, like, if it was, like, there's one thing I know for sure. If it was Jeff Quinn, he'd be getting eviscerated for it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He'd be getting crushed for this performance, right? And that's when, you know, no one wanted to hear it last year when Blake Fisher got injured in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
No one wanted to hear it. You know, no excuse, right? The O-line U and all this stuff, right?
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
so
fair.
You inherit Blake Fisher, and you inherit Joe Alt, and you inherit Andrew Christ, and all these guys who have played, and you inherit Josh Lugg, and they come out in the opener, and they're turning guys loose left and right. It's no good.
No.
It's no good, you know? No. It's not even like they physically got beat. Their assignments, they were not assignment correct a lot of the time. For whatever the reason, you know, I just have a hard time believing it was always them shifting or that this, that, and the other thing. So,
that's probably also the reason, at least some reason for, you know, somewhat optimism they can get it fixed is it wasn't just getting overpowered. It was assignments, which, again, you think theoretically, you should be able to fix that on film. You should be able to fix it.
100%. 100%.
But that's still theoretical. They have to do it.
Assignments? Like, come on, man. Like, that's you got to know what you're doing.
And
you got
to
know what you're doing.
Even talking about the Patterson injury, I will say that I don't think, again, if we're listing from 1 to 5 level of concern about offensive linemen, I mean, Kristofic is 3rd at worst. Meaning that Alt and Fisher are probably the least worrisome. And then right after Alt and Fisher, I got Kristofic. And it's the other two that probably are more of concern. And Kristofic is the one that wasn't even supposed to be a starter 3 weeks ago.
I have Alt and Fisher at like 1.
Yeah, that's what I mean. 1 and 2.
And 1 and 1A. Not even 1 and 2. Like fair. 1 and 1A. And then the rest of them are at 5. Mm.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
It was not good. It was not bad. It was bad.
It was bad. I agree.
So,
All right.
Not that they can't figure it out. I'm just worried.
True.
So,
we figured it out last year. We can see if we can figure it out this year.
They figured it out last year.
It took a while. So let's see. They got to figure it out quicker this year. All right. Our buddy Chris Jenkins. Thank you as always, Chris. He's a 4-parter. So he's learning from Oscar. Number one, we touched on already. So the safety blitz, wrong play call or bad timing? I think we both think wrong play call.
The answer is yes.
Correct.
All those things.
Correct. Okay. So Chris is the one who asked which offensive player impressed you the most. We got Buckner at the top of the list. We already talked about, and we talked about some others who, again, I think were impressive relative to, at least impressive to me, relative to expectations. Didn't it seem like the defense was hitting a lot harder than they were the last few years? Was his third question. This one, I didn't notice that, to be honest. I didn't notice the defense hitting harder.
No,
I think it was, I mean, the defense has been pretty strong the last few years. I think, you know, kind of on par with where we saw. Number four from Chris, over under on points scored against Marshall. I already tipped my hand on this one because he says, I'm guessing we put up 35 plus. I will take the over.
I'm going to take the under.
Ooh, okay. All right. Here we go. Next up is Corey Radio, at Corey Radio, asks us, what was the biggest positive and negative surprise from Saturday night? I think we covered the biggest negative surprise, and it was the offensive line.
Yeah.
What was the biggest positive surprise for you?
Secondary, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Other than, let me ask you, how did you feel? Shit, was it first drive, second drive? When Ohio State, I think it was the second drive, when Ohio State was just like, let's look for Cam Hart and target him, and went after him like three plays in a row, four plays in a row, whatever it was. That was their second drive, right?
No, was it third? I mean, I know third? What drive you're talking about.
Right? Whatever drive that was when they just like went at, I will say, after that drive, my level of concern in the secondary went from like, again, like middle level of concern kind of going in. Cause we talked all summer, you know, there may be, you know, after Joseph, there were questions at safety and some of the depth. I was like, that rose. But then it like, whatever they did on the sideline, like good on them. Cause that was a very rough series for Cam Hart.
He just had it was weird. It was a rough. Yeah. Like you said, like he,
but then after that
the guy on the thing. Yeah. He was okay after that. I don't know. He didn't seem right to me. There was something off about him. He just didn't seem right to me, but yeah, like here's the thing too, right? And this is like kind of a holistic deal. Okay. We go into the game and we think like the pass rush has to be great because if it isn't, our secondary is going to get destroyed. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the one group that had the toughest matchup. Now, granted, they didn't have they didn't have Jackson Smith and Jigba, and obviously he's a great player and that sort of thing, and that helps the defense. Okay, no question, especially the secondary, right?
Yep.
But Ibuka is a five-star player.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is a top 50 player.
Yep.
The kid number 9, I keep forgetting his name. He's a top 100 player.
Okay,
they're bringing in dudes.
They're not bringing in walk-ons. They're not bringing in former walk-ons.
Actually, they are, because the kid caught the pass against Jaden Mickey's a walk-on.
Well, top 100 and top 50 players are not walk-ons.
But the point is, they still have Travion Henderson, who is a five-star running back. You know, it's not like they're not. Yeah. It's not like it's Sisters of the Poor. You know, right. And so they went out Sisters there, of the and
that was a good
and they
Lou had Holtz. Channeling your inner Lou Holtz there.
Thank you. And so they had the toughest job, and they rose to the occasion.
Yeah.
And they played a game worthy of winning. And what happened? And so then it's like, for me, it's like they play a game worthy of winning the game, right? They played, put in a performance that is going to win them the game. So like for me, I can't hear about it with like the offensive line and the defensive line not being able to come up with a performance.
Yep.
Because those guys are up against it too, and they came up with a performance.
Yeah.
So the Lions needed to do it. They needed to come up with a performance in order to win the game, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that has me like most upset about all of this. It's like we lost with our strengths, not with our weaknesses.
And Ohio State won that game with the identity that we thought Notre Dame would have.
Yeah, right.
Like wearing us down, and then the fourth quarter just like taking our heart out. Like that was what they did. It was like that fourth quarter, it was like Notre Dame's defense was gassed, and Ohio State was just like, now we run, and we run right at you. And you're not going to stop us. And we didn't. And it was like, that's not the Ohio State that we thought. The Ohio State that we were going to go against was this high-flying offense. And to your point, we shut them down. I mean, I should have mentioned here, Corey actually also wrote in. For me, it's the emergence of Morrison at corner and the lack of a consistent pass rush by the defensive line, which we also talked about. And I think if you take it like a higher level, and instead of focusing on just like one kind of area that was disappointing or was a negative surprise, and to me, I think it, from an overall perspective, you can say Notre Dame really did not get big performances from its like top line players, which is what you need in a big game like this. Again, if you look at like, say, the top 10 players on the roster, some played good games, but for the most part, again, we talked about like how little Notre Dame got from some of its top line players. And that was the biggest negative surprise. I think, or that you could say that's kind of, cause that encompasses, you know, some of the offensive line and defensive line issues, but even some other players, right? My boy Marist, who I have been waiting, you know, a year to watch, like you didn't hear his name a lot. You didn't hear Cam Hart's name a lot after that third drive where he got targeted, but in terms of making, you know, big plays. And again, Cam, you think of Cam Hart as one of Notre Dame's better players. Even Mayer had, what was his final total, like 32 yards receiving or something? It was not a lot.
Yeah.
And even the one play that he had that could have been bigger, kind of, you know, he fumbled on it when he had more room to run. And again, so in a game like that, you need your stars to make big plays, and Notre Dame's stars did not make big plays. And that was a negative surprise.
So I'll give Mayer a pass just because he's affected, just like the wide receivers are affected by
the Agreed.
Has. So I'll give him a pass. It's not like like the one he fumbled on, like, sure.
I can say he got hit. Bad.
No, he didn't. But I'm saying like I give a much harder time to you know, Foskey and Jason Adamolola and, you know, I don't know. I was kind of worried about Cam going into the game because, you know, he sat out all spring with the shoulder, and then he had to sit out parts of camp because of, I guess, his hamstring. So he wasn't playing a lot of football.
That's fair.
You know, so I was worried about him a bit in this game. I thought he played, you know, the one touchdown he gave up was just, I guarantee he's not happy with that.
It looked more like, again, mental, you know what I mean? He was not in the right.
It was bad technique. And then he made a poor decision.
It was not like somebody just flat burned him. Like, again, that's one, like, you look at the offensive line struggles and you hope, like, easily correctable. That's a play I think is easily correctable.
Right.
I don't take that as something that, like, you know, we're going to see, you know, moving forward. Yeah. But, and I mean, I get point taken on Mayer. I just mean, like, again, you knew
It is a matter of fact that their star players did not perform like exactly. stars.
Exactly. So. All right, here we go. Clutch Sports Notre Dame says this, the Irish team felt like it had a different energy Saturday night. They were certainly physical. What are things that you like, if there aren't any, that you dislike, what you've seen from Freeman as head coach, you know, pregame, during the game, and postgame? So we covered on some of the things we liked, but he's also asking specifically about Freeman. Anything you liked or disliked about him that we haven't talked about so far?
About Freeman?
Yes. From what you've seen from Freeman as head coach. I already mentioned it, but I liked that he seemed in control, which is good. I mean, it sounds that, yes, that it should be a given for the head coach, but it was his first game. He's at his alma mater. It was on the road. It was at night. There was every reason for him to not necessarily, you know, look the most comfortable. And I tell you what, he looked a little more comfortable than that game I saw, you know, Georgia versus Oregon. Their defensive coordinator became a head coach and took on a top five team. But so that to me was was a positive from Freeman. I do generally like Freeman's demeanor on the sideline as well, not destroying. You know, there were times that, again, yeah, Kelly would have just ripped Buckner a new one for things like the play clock and things like that when Buckner was making mistakes. But I generally liked the way that Freeman handled himself on the sidelines and handled some of his younger players. What else? I would say things that, I mean, there were, if we're going to say things I disliked, I hate punting from, the opponent's 35-yard line. I don't care what the down or distance is. That was just, I don't like it. Don't like it. Never going to like it. I mean, unless it's fourth and goal from the 35, right? Like, your odds there are just not, I don't know. Just go for it. Just go for it. So that's one I'm never going to like. But I don't know. What about any others?
So, I don't know about things I like. I mean, I don't know. I think it's pretty boilerplate in as far as that. I don't know. Like, there are a lot of things, like, I kind of regard as fluff, you know, that is just kind of like, it's not a negative and it's not a positive. It just is what it is, right? Like, so, like, so what you're talking about, like, looking in control and stuff, Okay, point taken, right? No problem.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a given, but he's a rookie head coach, right. So like, that's why it's a positive to me.
I understand. It's, you know, it's not a criticism. To me, it's just kind of like, you know, it's hard to evaluate. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, I think it would be fair to question how they wanted to approach the game offensively.
That is because, very fair.
Because... And he talked about this, right? Like, it's kind of hard for me even to put it on Reese, because he said, like, we want to control the clock and we want to limit possessions and that sort of thing. And they did. But did that lead to them playing their best game offensively? You know, did they, cause if they were genuinely surprised, like, we really thought they'd be better on the offensive line. And because we weren't, it's because the game plan is the game plan, right? You've installed it for 2 weeks now. You've been practicing it. So you're going to go with the game plan. And look, you're up 10-7 at half. And Reese came out to start second half and they were throwing, right? He tried to take a couple shots. I thought after that, he kind of bogged down a little bit, which I didn't love.
Nope.
I think the mindset of, like, okay, we have to limit possessions. It's because, to me, it's like, it's mindful of the fact that you don't want to get into a track meet with them, and we don't want it to be an open flow kind of game, right? Where it's like, we're throwing a bunch. And when I say track meet, I mean, like, you know, we're throwing a bunch, the clock is stopping, they get 8-9 possessions in the first half. Right. Uh-huh. Which didn't happen. They didn't have a ton of plays either, you know, at least until they started driving on Notre Dame. Yeah. Right. But the point is it took them a long time to kind of figure it out because they didn't really have the ball enough, you know? So it's kind of difficult where you want to slow them down, and part of slowing them down and keeping them out of rhythm is keeping them off the field and not giving them as many possessions. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also need to find a way to score points. And to be honest, they had kind of hit the mark. But by the time it was, you know, by the point of the game where it was time to, like, okay, we need to get aggressive here, they couldn't turn that up. They had no ability to turn up that aggression and to sustain, you know, good play on that side of the ball. And so ultimately, your plan got you in position to where you had the lead, but then you couldn't extend the lead. You couldn't take over the game because you weren't running that kind of – you didn't have that kind of offense, you know? So it's – I don't know. It's kind of a philosophical thing. But beyond that, like, I think he's – mostly boilerplate. If there's anything that I like or dislike, it's kind of just nitpicky and not even really worth like talking about. So.
Okay. All right. Those are all fair points. Let's see. You got Nick Buchholz asking us hypothetically. You're going to like this question. Hypothetically, what grade would you give a special teams unit as a whole that had a punt return player muff two punts and a kicker that had a kick blocked and a miss and missed another? I wonder, what do you think he's referencing here?
Well, he had two kicks blocked. So let's say hypothetically, the kicker missed another, but then also had two, a field goal blocked and a PAT blocked.
Yeah.
Which the first field goal block caused you to make a change.
Hypothetically speaking,
the first field goal block caused you to make a change to your blocking, which then led to the extra point being blocked that hypothetically cost you the game.
Yeah.
What would I say to that?
Yeah.
I would say that's bad coaching.
True. Well, so he asked what grade. So I give it an grade. I give it an A plus, because I loved the outcome of the game that Nick is referencing here of LSU and Florida State. My only regret is I tried to stay awake to watch it, and I couldn't, Greg. You know why?
Yeah.
Because I stayed up till 4 a.m. in Portugal watching Notre Dame and Ohio State. And then I had to be on the road by 8:30 a.m. to go to the airport to get home. And then we flew across the Atlantic Ocean with a 10-and-a-half-month-old baby that required a lot of entertaining. I'll tell you what, though, man. Yeah. Little man cried less on that plane than I think most LSU fans last night. I think he cried less. He was a trooper, man. He cried for like maybe a total of 30 minutes. Other than that, he needed constant, you know, stimulation from me and his mom, me and the wife. But other than that, man, he was a trooper on that plane. But I loved the outcome. And let me tell you, or let me ask you, could you have crafted a better outcome to the start of the Brian Kelly era at LSU than the special teams unit of Brian Polian failing so miserably that it cost them the game? Like, could you have scripted it better? It's better than a blowout.
I enjoyed it.
It's better than if they got blown out.
I definitely enjoyed it. That's true.
I think every Notre Dame fan enjoyed it. That was like when I woke up this morning at like 4:30 a.m., I think, because everybody's clock was still, again, 5 hours ahead, including the babies. And I saw Twitter. I was like, oh, man, I wish I could have stayed awake and watched that game. But that was amazing.
It's really great. I'd give it an A for alignment.
Oh, alignment. That's good. That's a good one. I didn't see too many people, using that in their tweets. I did see Drake Bowen, tweeting about, going to a program that has the resources to win. You could also say that maybe that extra point got blocked because of poor alignment. I don't know. Those are all things that could be said. Okay. All right. We got a few more questions here, and good call on going to questions early, because we're already at like almost an hour and 15.
Yeah.
Okay. Man. We got one here from, Brad. Brad, we're just going to say Brad. Brad, I'm sorry. Your last name has got some S's and Z's in it that is throwing me off here as I am very tired today. But this, do you think Estime continues to get the starting job at running back, or do you think Tyree will get more touches? I liked Estime, but I feel like he was made to look bad by somewhat poor offensive line play.
I don't think any back did anything to lose their spot. And I got to say, man, like, big credit to Logan Diggs. He's out there. Like,
yeah.
When he tore his rotator cuff, we thought it'd be October. He played in the opener.
Against Ohio State. So that was huge.
Credit.
Were you surprised at Estime out touching all the other running backs?
No.
I mean, he really rose this summer.
Given the fact, so they put because he was the one they were going to run with.
Yeah.
But I think Tyree was out there almost the same amount of snaps. I think it was 26 to 24. So from a snaps perspective, it was the same. But they clearly wanted to run with Estime. So that was totally.
You think he's going to continue to outsnap him the rest of this season? Not outsnap, sorry, out carry.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right, here we go. We got Sean Martin. What do you think the offense could have done differently in their approach to this game? Definitely came in with the sense that we are capable of more than that.
So
this is an interesting question because it's like, are you assuming that the offensive line plays better? Or let's assume the offensive line performs as they did. And you like, what could you have done differently with that level of offensive line play?
Well, you got to get the ball out in the perimeter a little bit more.
Yep.
You know, you got to take them out of the game, right? Like put that ball in the hands of guys like Styles and Lindsey and that sort of thing. And
let a screen.
It's like maybe it's like one
screen play.
You know, they're fast, and so it's very hard to do X. Like, look, of course it's hard. You need to put it on guys to outplay them, you know? And I know it's not easy, and it's not – but the fact of the matter is you played a whole football game against Ohio State and Lorenzo Styles touched the ball one time. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. It cannot happen. Like, that's terrible. Like, that is not good. Like, you
no jet sweeps.
You only tried to throw it to him twice.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Not good.
You cannot he was only going to touch it twice. Here's the other part too. And please no one take this as a shot at Matt Salerno because it isn't. Okay. The fact of the matter is that the person who's going to be the wide receiver one on this team is Lorenzo Styles.
Okay. Correct.
And so that is true. All right. You have the biggest play in the game. It's 14-10. Ohio State has just scored. You just ran a jet sweep to Tyree, who he got to Ohio State 40. And then you dial up what is meant to be a touchdown, which is a wheel route off of a play action to Matt Salerno. You give it to Salerno and you don't give it to Lorenzo Styles. What are you doing?
All right.
He is supposed to, it has to be on him because he is the wide receiver one. It's not that Matt Salerno can't do it, but you need Lorenzo Styles to be the guy. You need him to catch, you want him catching 7 or 8 passes every single game.
You
need to give him that shot. Because he's the guy. That is the reason you recruit him. He is your highest rated recruit. He is the one that you plucked from Ohio State, plucked him from Michigan. And you get in the big house, or not the big house, in the horseshoe against Ohio State, and you have the play dialed up. And I know you, if you watch the game, like, and if you watch it on the Skycam, like I did, like without the commentary, like there's no narrative and you can get a feel for the game. And it's like, man, this play that they are about to run, like, you know, they plan to score a touchdown on this play. And you threw it up to not Lorenzo Styles. What? You got to throw it to him. You have to. So to me, to answer the question, what do you have to do? You have to emphasize your playmakers. You have to emphasize your playmakers. So that's the answer. It's like
a mini rant. It's a good one, though. You want to know, by the way, one of the craziest stats, or one of the most I don't know what you want to call it, in terms of stats that I saw or looked up. You know how many targets the Notre Dame receivers had?
8.
Yep.
Or 7.
Yep. 8. You know how many targets each of Ohio State's top 2 receivers got?
8.
11 each.
Ooh, I guessed 8 because I thought it would make sense. But
no, 11 each. So they targeted their top 2 receivers 22 times, which is more passing attempts in Notre Dame there than Buckner had. Not good. It's not good. All right. What do we got? We got a couple more questions here. Sean also asked, was the Ohio State line good or good at holding? I think you maybe tweeted one where there was one blatant hold that got missed. But I mean, I didn't see a whole lot of holding going on. And I generally freak freak out when it happens. So I didn't see that. We got David at David_1980_90 says two games under the new regime, two blown halftime leads to top 10 opponents. Good game plans to start the game, but is it the inexperience with the coaching or with the coaches showing up at halftime / in-game adjustments?
So
I think the two games are very, very different.
It's two games. The bowl game, I just don't count. It's not even, yeah. They're different staffs for one.
Yeah. And it's complete. Those are two very different games in terms
right,
of what
it's, happened. Yeah. So I'll just address this one. The reason that it's hard for upsets to happen, just period, is that it's hard to sustain excellent play when you're the less talented team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why upsets are hard, right? That's yep. why more talented teams tend to, you know, pull it out in the end because they're more talented. You know, and so you can only match their level for so long, generally speaking, right? I think we saw that on defense. You know, they held their own, and then Ohio State, you know, got their rhythm. They got into, a groove there, and they started hitting Notre Dame. And it's not like Notre Dame was getting gashed, and it's not like they were getting destroyed, but they were just kind of making plays over and over again, and that's the difference, right? And that's what they can do, and that's why when you have the chance you need to get them right. You need to score and make it 17-7. You need to score and make it 17-14, so they're answering you instead of just answering themselves. So to me,
yep.
They're doing the same stuff, because really, like, the offense, you know, obviously it wasn't better, but it's not like the first half they were humming, you know? So that's what I would say. It's just like it's not that they didn't make adjustments or anything. It's just that they especially offensively, they never had enough to win the game.
Yep.
Defensively, they did. It's just that Ohio State found their rhythm, and like, that's the number one offense in the country, right? Or supposed to be. So that's going to happen, right? And Notre Dame, look, for as good as we think Notre Dame's defense is, they don't have dominant players, as we saw, because the ones they were supposed to were not at all, right? So mm-hmm. unless you have a Kyle Hamilton or something like that, then you're going to have a hard time finding that one big play. So
I agree. And what I would say is, you know, everyone talks about the game really being lost, you know, being lost in the fourth quarter. But really, I think it was lost third quarter. And you hinted and referenced it here too, of those drives, those two drives that Notre Dame had the ball up 3 points with the chance to extend the lead and didn't. That's when the game was lost. The game was lost then, not necessarily when Ohio State actually took the lead and then extended the lead, because Notre Dame had its chance earlier and did not do it. So next question, we got the real Biblio says, if Kelly was still Notre Dame coach, would the Irish have won? What was different about this Freeman coach team? Now, Brian Kelly would not have won that game, because he never did. He never did at Notre Dame.
I don't know. Like, no. To me, I don't think he would have won.
No. So.
I don't think so.
Next question. Jack Sullivan at Jack O'Slantern says, how much do you think home field advantage played into Saturday's result? Obviously, we had big issues in the trenches, but the momentum swings, especially following Ohio State's TD to go up 14-10, seemed enormous. blown up kickoff return and time out before the first Notre Dame play. Immediately. I don't know. I don't think it played a huge result because I don't, and the team didn't look rattled. It wasn't like this wasn't 2019 where we forgot to practice a, you know, the silent count and yeah. There was a ton of false starts. This wasn't that. If anything, you know, Jack brings up a good point that we did not touch on, and that is just how awful Notre Dame's kick return blocking was. It was awful.
Yeah, just take it or just fair catch it.
It was bad.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it wasn't, you know, as bad as LSU's special teams. Ooh. But I mean, special teams in general. Other than that, I thought actually special teams were a mixed bag. In general, you had that.
They were. I think it was fine. Like, yeah. they made the one field goal.
We had the fair catch. Fair catch after.
Well,
fair
that's
catch.
That's a choice though. That's a choice, and not just that, but there's no way that Marcus Freeman, as we know, if he wants to do something, he'll say. So to me, I can't get on special teams because Marcus Freeman wants them to fair catch.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, so to me, it's not anything.
Well, we could be upset if that's what Freeman's asking for, though, too.
Okay. All right. I mean, sure.
I will say, you know who surprised? I think I can't remember a single game, or I can't remember a single player who had as big of a swing in production as John Sott as a punter. His first two punts.
I thought he was terrible, and then he was freaking.
His first two punts were. Bad. They were not good. They were just like, whoa, those are 30 yards in the air. What is going on? And then after that, it was just like, he was like, oh, wait, guys, I can actually punt. I was joshing you guys in the first two. I was just fooling here. So good on him, man, because he had a very rough start to that game and then turned into a real strength and had some booming punts towards the end. And what's crazy is those first two punts were like in the 30-ish yard range, and he still averaged 40 plus on the game. So good on him. Good on him. We got the two Irish brothers show. Is Tommy Rees on a short leash? No, is my short answer.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Meaning, is he, you know, is he a short leash? I would assume this means is Tommy Rees almost on the hot seat? And if he has another performance like that, is he in danger of, you know,
he's in danger of nothing happening.
Exactly. Exactly. So no. Exactly. Okay, we got one final question from at JoeIrish13. Why is Chris Fowler so bad?
Who?
Yeah.
Oh, Chris Fowler.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. He's not good though. Like the field goal. He's like, I just snuck it in. It's like, dude, that was down the center. I don't know what that is. The Salerno catch was a pick, or you thought it was a pick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, what really annoyed me, and Jamie from ISD, I think, mentioned this in one of his articles that I read. The thing that really annoyed me about the production was that, like, they really didn't, as Notre Dame's offensive line struggled, did not talk about Patterson at all. Like, it was just like, they mentioned he wouldn't play in the beginning, and they're like, we're never going back to that. Whereas they constantly referenced, the injuries.
Ohio Smith State and Jigba.
Yeah. So that was not cool. I didn't like that at all. No, I didn't like it. All right, we're at an hour 27 right now on the recording. So we went for about an hour and a half almost. What else? Is there anything else we haven't talked about this game worth mentioning here?
No, I think we covered it. I think we're good. You're good.
I think so too.
This is what I would say. I would say don't make any assumptions about what is good and what is not based on Saturday. Right. We're going to find out. OK, there are things we're concerned about, obviously, but we don't know for sure that the secondary is going to be a strength all year. We don't know for sure that the defensive line is going to be not great or the offensive line. We don't know. OK, nope. So there were almost no takeaways to glean from the Florida State game last year, right? We just don't know. So just we're concerned about things. That's fine, right?
Other than Dort.
It's not like it didn't happen. Yeah, for sure. So it's not like it didn't happen. But,
okay.
But it's just, let's trust me. We don't know. We're not sure yet.
That is fair. And I think, too, you think back to some other recent openers. You mentioned Florida State, but you also mentioned the Louisville game from 2019. Remember how bad Notre Dame's linebackers looked in the 2019 Louisville game?
I do.
They were bad. They looked awful. And remember how good they ended up looking the rest of the year?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. So that, I think, hopefully is what we are talking about with the defensive line specifically, because that's the one that I just don't see it's the one that surprised me the most, actually. Again, as we talk about all the surprises we had about this game, but that's the one that surprised me the most. Offensive line, I think when you look at it in retrospect, you could say, well, you know, there were some new starters. You had the injury to Patterson, blah, 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 right? I mean, not necessarily excuse making there, but you could look at it in hindsight and go, okay, defensive line, not so much. All right. So, I mean, I think we got a review, which I should have read at the beginning. So that's on me. We're going to read it. I might read it in the next one, too. Just because I said I would start reading them in the beginning and then I forgot. But this is from Fred 500. Says the title, Frank and Greg Always Entertain. That's a great title. I like the title of this review. You see where this is going? Five-star review. Says, after taking a break from listening to this podcast over the offseason, it was great to catch up with these two diehard Notre Dame fans this week. I found UHND the day Ty Willingham was fired, and have enjoyed Frank's commentary ever since. Now with a podcast, it brings two of the blog's main contributors' full personalities to life. I love that they are generally as optimistically delusional about the Irish prospects for victory as I am. Fred, thank you very much. Man, if you found UHND the day that Tyrone Willingham was fired, that means you have been following along with us at UHND for almost, 18 years.
Two decades almost.
Almost 18 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Fired, not hired. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, it was hired. Yeah, it was hired to be be the full 20 years, which is crazy. You realize this is the 25th season of UHND.com. That's wild. I know. That's crazy to me. Anyway, Fred, thank you for the review, as always. Thank you, everybody else, who posed questions. I think we did about an hour's worth of questions today. So you guys make recording these easy because you give us the content. We just have to ramble on with our answers. So I think, Greg, we get a preview Marshall later this week. We're gonna be able to fit that in, or
I'll give it my best shot.
All right. Well, we're going to try. If not, you guys might be stuck with me again doing a solo pod, but it won't be as as weary when I record it and tired. So, hey, again, thank you all for the questions. Thank you for listening. And as always, go Irish.